support. Now, in those days, the not just left-wingers, but outright communists that were trying to get in, maneuver their way into the unions. Mm-hmm. And Bill Glenn was close to those people. I don't think he was a communist, but he was supported by them. And so we had, it was a choice between me and him. We get back to this one vote thing, and I was selected by one vote then of the delegates along the lake there.
Sounds like
Grand Rapids, Muskegon, yeah, so this mm-hmm. one vote thing got to be a habit. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I went on the board. And when I was first elected, it was just as a CIO. But by the time I served a little while, the merger, AFL and the CIO were merged. So I was elected to the state council. Well, first the CIO, but then in the, just before the year was out, they were merged, became AFL-CIO.
Where were the headquarters?
The headquarters was in Grand Rapids, mm-hmm. where I worked, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how was it that you ultimately became nominated or came to the Board of Trustees of Michigan State?
The way I got that was pretty much the same way, because the AFL had a candidate running for the State Board of Education. The CIO wanted a candidate too, and that's where my contest with John Glenn coming along. So, but I was picked, as I said, by one vote to run for the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University. In those years, there were only six members on the board, two elected every year, and so I was elected in 1957. In that spring election, to what it was a six-year term, because as I said, in those days there was only six members on the on the board. Then I continued on that, and I was working for the International Union, Retail Wholesale and Department Store Union, they called it, which included all kinds of retail and wholesale stuff. Let me see.
Do you remember your first meeting?
On the Board of Trustees, yeah. There was a fellow from Grand Rapids, he was a businessman, that was running for re-election on the board, and but the Democrats swept that spring election.
I see.
And so that one wasn't a close one. Mm-hmm. But they swept that, so I, that's when I was elected then, in the spring election. I think it was the first, they used to have it the first Monday in April. That was later changed by the Constitutional Convention, but anyway. The Democrats won that election, so I was elected that spring to the Board of Trustees of Michigan. Well, they called it State Board of Agriculture, mm-hmm. and they because Michigan State, you probably know, started out as pretty much an agricultural mechanic, which was a Thanks to Abraham Lincoln, you know, established those land-grant colleges. Mm-hmm. Just to side on it, that bill passed establishing the land-grant college during Buchanan's term, but he vetoed the bill. Mm-hmm. It was passed again when Lincoln was president, and he signed it, you know. That's what established all the land-grant colleges. Mm-hmm. And there's other legislation, of course, national legislation, stopped the university. Most states have both. A land-grant college and a state university. Some are joint, like yeah. Ohio State. And there's a few others that have, they're combined. But it was those things, and as I say, Buchanan had vetoed that bill, but Lincoln signed it. Mm-hmm. And so you can think
that was the Morrill Act.
Yeah, the Morrill Act, mm-hmm. yeah.
Do you think your farm background helped you in some of those early years?
Well,
at least in understanding it, or?
Well, yeah, but then when I left high school, we're getting back again. When my father then got married again. My mother had died, I think I told you, in 1933. And about 4 or 5 years later, he got married again. And I stayed with him for a while, and my grandmother did too. But eventually, both of us thought it would be better if we'd, and finally, they arranged to have her go to it wasn't a retirement home, but it was a private home that was run for people, and we'd go see her. It was a nice place.
Your grandmother?
My grandmother, mm-hmm. Yeah, my grandmother Stevens. Mm-hmm. She lived to be 98 years old.
98.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And,
When you went to your first board meeting, had you met President Hanna before that?
Oh, yeah, I had. I didn't know not very much, but when I went to the first board meeting in January of 1958, of course, he was the president. And Hanna had been, president, I don't know just what year he took over as president, but before he was president, he was secretary to the president. I think it was Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Shaw that was president. He was the secretary to the Board of Trustees, or the State Board of Agriculture,
mm-hmm.
because the name change didn't come at that time. And so I went to the first meeting, and I went up with Kellogg Center was already in operating then. Went up the night before and stayed overnight, and one of the other Democratic members who had been elected a couple years before me, Connor Smith. He was a veterinarian from Pinconning. That's over on the east side of Michigan, north of Saginaw. He came in and he knocked on my door, when I went down to breakfast with him, I went in there, the trustees' breakfast, And then we'd have an open trustees' meeting. Nothing very exciting. Excited happened there, and things as far as the board is concerned went along very smooth until Hanna. Elected chairman. They elected. Now they have in Michigan State. They have an automatic system where it rotates.
The chairmanship of the
trustees. Chairmanship automatically rotates.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, you had to be elected, by your fellow board members.
Mm-hmm.
And I was elected chairman after, I went on in 58, it was probably around 60 or 61, something like that. And I think there was there weren't too many exciting controversies. So for Hanna, usually we would come in with his recommendations, and we'd discuss them and ask questions and try to find out exactly what it was. And and there had been a secretary of the board had left, Carl McDonald, and retired, I guess. And of course there was a movement on to, we had to get another secretary. And this was the first time that I started having controversy with some of my own supporters. There was a pressure on to elect a fellow from Grand Rapids by the name of Tom Quimby as the secretary of the board, I'd been on long enough and I'd read enough about the trustees and what their responsibilities and so forth are. So I just knew that, and I knew that it wouldn't. You see, they always had underhand. It was pretty much informal, but there'd always be sort of a committee, a representative faculty and students and alumni and so forth that would make recommendations. And I just knew it would be the wrong thing to push for the Democrats, although we did have a majority, I think of about 4 or 3 or 6 on the board. Barely we had a majority. It might have been 4-2
or 2.
But anyway, they elected, finally they, he wanted Jack Breslin. And Jack Breslin was appointed secretary of the board. And I supported that. But I it was the first time I got pressure, you know, to do something that I didn't, because I always, you know, I like to figure that I do the right thing. And so we went on a few years, quite a few years. I think it was 11 years I served on the board. And I was reelected in 1963 to the final spring election that elected the board members.
This is before the Constitutional Convention.
Yeah, the Constitutional Convention went on the ballot the same day that I was reelected to the board, and that was a close one. I just squeaked in by maybe 3,000 or 4,000 votes, that is, they say it was close, but it was fairly close. But the Constitutional Convention, up until then, we'd had just 6 members on our board. And the University of Michigan had always had 8. And Wayne State, I think, had, I'm not sure, 6 or 8. But anyway, the Constitutional Convention passed, and WAP established the board. All of them had 8 members, 2 elected every 2 years. And after 1963, there was some Democrats came on the board. I think in that 80, I think it was about the 63 election, although I'm not quite sure. It might have been later on in the first fall election. And there were some, get my feet tangled up here. The Democrats had continued in the fall to win the election, and it's 1 year there was a fellow by name of Claire White from Bay City was elected, and he became a member of the board, and Claire White was all right, he's a friend of mine, but he was kind of a noisy guy, and he wanted to tell the president what to do all the time. And then I think in the next election, there was another fellow by the name of Warren Huff from Plymouth, and Frank Hartman from, I'm not just sure where Frank Hartman was from, but anyway, they were nominated by the Democrats, and they were elected. And this was in the period while I first went on the board until Hannah resigned. And Hannah ran a good ship, you know, to a lot of extent. The president now, Peter McPherson, reminds me, the way he operates reminds me of Hannah. He's on top of things. He runs it, you know, and he always had pretty good support from the board, but. I was elected chairman then. Just before Hannah decided to leave. Now the reason he left, because Nixon had been elected president, and I remember I was a good friend of Jerry Ford when he was a congressman in Grand Rapids, because when he ran for congressman, we had an old congressman there in that district by the name of Bartell J. Yonkman. It sounded like junk man, but it was spelled Yonkman, the J, you know. Mm-hmm. Yonkman, Bartell J. Yonkman. And the Democrats had tried to run everybody against him, and the Republicans had tried to, a lot of Republicans had tried to run candidates against him, but they never were successful until Jerry Ford came along. And Jerry Ford, one time I was sitting up there when I was working for the union, you know, the National Union, but I was stationed in Grand Rapids, an office there in Grand Rapids. Jerry Ford called me up. I can't ever remember meeting him before this. And he said, I'd like to talk with you sometime. So he came over, And we talked, and what he told me what he was there for, that he was going to run against Bartell Youngman in the primaries, in the Republican primaries. And he wondered if there was any chance of getting any labor support, because he wanted to get his support from as many people as he could. And labor had won. Of course, we had a mayor in Grand Rapids by the name of George Welsh, who hated Youngman too, you know, and he would support anybody, you know, that was running against him. And
The Civic Auditorium was named after him.
Yeah, George W. Welsh. Mm-hmm. And I talked to him for a while, and I said, well, I don't know, let me talk to some of the people. And so I did, and at that time, Leonard Woodcock, who you probably have heard of, he just died
just
recently,
died.
A wonderful man.
He did die?
Yeah, he died while we were in Washington. Yep. It was in the Washington Post, as a matter of fact.
Not too long ago, right?
Yeah. When we were down there at the Silvers the last time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was, I think, 89 years old when he died. But anyway, he was regional director of that region, of the UAW, Region 1D. And we had he had a staff of people, of guys that I knew, because we were all working out of the same building. It was up on Sheldon Avenue then. And I said, well, let me see what they have to say. So I talked with, you know, I got a few of them together. He went out to lunch, Leonard Woodcock and Kenny Robinson and one of his staff members and a few others. And I told them what Jerry Ford wanted to know if we support him. And we talked a while, you know, God. And Woodcock finally said, Jesus, you know, let's take a shot at it. So I called Jerry back and we we took it out. And we also had a couple other things. We had a state senator, his name was Feenstra, that the Democrats and some Republicans have been trying to get out of their way for a long time. So we got, we had a Vietnam vet by the name of Louis Schooley. We got him to run in the Republican primary
mm-hmm.
against the state senator. And but nobody would give him a chance, you know, to win at all. But anyway, Jerry Ford won that nomination. He won that Republican nomination. That was in 1948.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 1948. And Louis Schooley defeated Feenstra, and of course went on, and he served a couple of terms in the Michigan House, two mm-hmm. or three mm-hmm. terms, I'm not sure how long. But it was a... Well, another side thing on that, after the nomination, after Ford had been not only nominated but elected, after the November election, then he won the Republican primary by defeating Youngman and went on to win the election. I don't know who the Democrats had up, but I think the Democrats only won that district once, and I think it was back in the mid-30s during the Roosevelt landslides. I think they won it once, but I can't remember who it was. It might have been McAllister, a fellow by the name of McAllister. But
and I know they didn't win it again until after Watergate. So
well, but yeah, that district, yeah, Jerry Ford served. The Democrats won after Watergate. I mean, what did Jerry Ford...
When he became vice president.
Yeah, he became vice president. He was appointed vice president by Nixon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, And then after that, of course, Vanderland. Was his name Vanderland? Vanderveen, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Vanderveen was a Democrat. Was elected after the Watergate.
74.
Hubbub, yeah.
You
must
have been there, too.
I wasn't. I was in Europe at the time, but I know a little bit about Jerry Ford.
Yeah, Vanderveen was elected. Dick Vanderveen. Mm-hmm. Dick Vanderveen was elected. He served a couple of terms,
mm-hmm.
and by that time I you know become real active in the Democratic Party.
And at the state level.
At the state level, and of course supporting national candidates too.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. But that picture up there, of course, was taken the year Soapy Williams was elected.
Which picture? Do you see it there?
Soapy and Nancy and mm-hmm. Judy, my daughter Judy, who now is 61 years old, when Jim was 57.
Mm-hmm.
he had, there's another side on that. Jerry called me after he was elected and wanted me to come over to his house, you know. He said he just got married, mm-hmm. and he had an apartment up on Cherry Street. So he invited Wendy and me to come over. And he also, that night, he didn't write it. I don't think he told me he didn't write it. But a fellow by the name of Jack Stiles, who later became, after when Jerry finally became president, you know, after the series, after the Watergate jumps and so forth, his top guy, you know, whatever it was. So we went over there and had a nice evening, you know, with Jack Stiles and his wife and Jerry and Betty Ford. And so I'd kept in contact with Jerry through the years. And whenever I'd go to Washington, I'd get in touch with him. And every once in a while, he'd call up, you know, and want to know if there was any particular thing, you know. And he was pretty good congressman. Yeah.
Did you know Phil Buchan?
Buchan, the law firm. Mm-hmm. Ford came into that law firm just a little while before he was elected to Congress, or some years, I guess, before he was elected to Congress. Amberg, Buchan and Law. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Julius Amberg. Boy, he was a brilliant man, smart man, yeah. One of the times when I was organizing, we organized the Wright Milling Company. And it was an old mill, you know, owned by the Wrights, two bachelors, brothers. And it was the mill, it was one of those old-fashioned mills, you know, that had one by a water wheel, you know, and all sort of thing. You'd go up there and it would shake, you know, the mill would shake. And that was one of the units of that local line gun happens that I organized. And when you mentioned that the law firm, Amberg, Duke, and the law, and I remember Julius Amberg, you know, when we were getting a contract with those workers there, he'd get up and he'd pace back and forth, you know, and be dictating all the time. Mm-hmm. And it was an interesting fellow.
Did you have any contacts with Jerry Ford when you were on the board at Michigan State?
Well, when Hannah left, we had Jerry Ford in there one time to speak, mm-hmm. at some affair or something, and of course I talked with him and met him and so forth. And then, but when Hannah left, I called Jerry, and I told him Nixon had been elected, you see, mm-hmm. and Hannah hadn't left yet, but he was talking about leaving. He called me over to lunch at Carl's house one side outside. I was chairman of the board of trustees, whether the state board of agriculture or the board of trustees. But anyway, sometimes they change the name in there. Oh, at the constitutional convention. So let me see. So by that time it was Michigan State University, and it was no longer state board of education. They changed it to board of trustees of Michigan State University. So anyway, I called Jerry and told him I'd like to talk with him sometime when he's going to be in Grand Rapids. And he had an office on Cherry Street. So he asked me to come up there. So I went up there and I told him, I said that I think Hannah's going to be leaving, because he had told me confidentially, you know, that he was going to be leaving. Oh, not that he was going to be leaving. He told me why he was leaving. It was because that he was hoping. He hadn't received any word yet. But he says, I think if they think I'm free, I may get some appointment into the administration. And he said, I've been on here either as president or secretary of the board for, I think, 29 years. And when he was secretary of the board, he practically ran the university, from what I hear. I wasn't around in those days, of course. But so actually, he was president of the university for a long time, actually all the time, and then many years before he was president. He operated, practically ran the president's office from the secretary's office. And so I told him, Jerry, I think is that if they're looking for a darn good person in the administration, they ought to take a look at John Hannah. Now, I don't know whether that had anything to do with it or not, but anyway, Nixon appointed him head of the Agency for International Development, and of course he went on and did a great job around the world, really establishing that, so it was a good functioning organization in the parts of the world that needed, you know, needed assistance. And I often thought, you know, Jerry never told me he said anything about it, but I'm sure other people talked with him too. But anyway, let's see, from then on, let's see, where were we then? Before Jerry was in Congress and Hannah was leaving, oh, and this is where we had the big controversies, about picking a successor to Hannah. So Claire White, who I mentioned before, and was a great pusher, of course, for Walter Adams. I like Walter Adams very much, but I had my questions as to whether or not he was the right guy to be president of the university. But anyway, sometimes you have to, I knew I was outnumbered on that one, so we made him not president, but he was acting president for a year, about a year, and then I think we did actually change that to president before the year ran out. And but there was a lot of he always said that he didn't want the job as president, but he did. You know, I knew he did. He never told me he did, but I knew he did because I knew the maneuverings he went, because he was quite a politician. I mean, he had a lot of contacts around the university, and not everybody around the university liked him. You probably heard of Charles Killingsworth.
Mm-hmm.
He was a head of the School of Labor Industrial Relations, which had been established at MSU. And he called me up one night, and I don't know if I could go over to his house. And I said, yeah, sure. So I went over, and what he wanted to talk to me about was, the way he put it was, he and Walter Adams were friends, but he didn't want Walter Adams president of the university.
Mm-hmm.
He said, don't make that man president of the university. So he said, and Walter Adams is a friend of mine. But anyway, and then it came down to who was going to be president. We had a search committee. We had in the home board of trustees, you know, interviewed several candidates. We had a fellow from Arkansas, I remember, come up that we talked to, and we interviewed several. And finally we got we had this interview with Clifton Wharton. We went to New York, and I remember we met him in the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, and he made a good impression on me and some of the others, but you had this click. This is when the development was for Williams, you know, to be president. And I'd supported Soapy Williams, great support. I remember so well when he went in 1948, early in 1948, when he walked into a Democratic meeting in Grand Rapids and he said, come in, my name is Soapy Williams and I'm running for governor. Nobody ever heard of him. Mm-hmm. Nobody there had, anyway. Mm-hmm. And they didn't think he was going to have much of a chance. But anyway, he ran, and by God, he won it.
Mm-hmm.
He was reelected six times, although two of those reelections were recounts, paper skin recounts. He ended up, the first one, I think, he was 5,000 votes behind Harry Kelly, who had been governor. He came back and ran again. And so they had to recount, and I got a call from Gus Scholl's office. Gus was president of the AFL-CIO at that time. And he wanted me to go up to Grand Haven and work on the recount. And it was all paper ballots in those days. They would come out, that is in Grand Haven. I guess they had some machines, but most up in Grand Haven was all paper. And a lot of it around the state was paper. So you'd have to go up there. I'd drive up to Grand Haven. And then I had a meeting in Traverse City. I was negotiating in Traverse City with some dairies up there. And I'd have to go back at night to Traverse City, you know, to try to keep the wheels on the buggy up there. Then I'd go back and work on the recount all day. And on the way back from Traverse City, going into Poole, with the idea of getting back to Grand Haven that night and getting into a motel or something, so back to the motel I was staying in and work on the recount, I heard on the radio in the car, that Harry Kelly had thrown in the sponge, and that Williams had been elected.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the same thing happened the next election, here against Paul Bagwell, and the Republican candidate.
And he was a Michigan State professor, right?
Yeah, yeah, he was. He was a professor at MSU.
Mm-hmm.
And that was close, but it wasn't quite as close. And Williams won that one already. And he went on to win six of those two-year terms.
Mm-hmm. In 1969, when Hanna retired, Men and Williams ever approach you personally?
Not at first, but there was so much pressure from Democrats.
Okay.
I did talk with him personally on that. It happened this way. At the state convention of the AFL-CIO, Gus Scholl, who was pressuring me? He was my boss. I worked for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked me, he said, "You're going to support Soapy for president?" And I said, "Well," I said, "they have a procedure adopted down there, representing faculty, students, alumni, pretty much all of the university community. I don't know, there was about 8 or 10 on that committee. And we had pretty much agreed that we would listen to candidates, at least, that were nominated by that committee on that list. I mean, it might be two, it might be two, three, or four. So I said, "Well, if he's on the list of this university-wide advisory committee, or whatever they call it, then we'll take a look at him." And, oh, man, were they mad, you know. They thought I was jumped. They thought, you know, that I would do just as they told me. But I didn't, and he wasn't on the list. And so we interviewed several people, and Wharton was on the list. And when it came time to